Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We were joined in the previous hour by Dr. Michael Schwartz, professor of sociology and faculty director of the Undergraduate College of Global Studies at Stony Brook University. Dr. Schwartz was talking about the catastrophic character of the president's surge plan in Iraq. Information on this is going to be posted eventually on the Republic Broadcasting Network archives that describe that segment of the show. I'm also going to be posting Dr. Schwartz's information along with some of his articles at Breaking All the Rules News, which you can find at batr.net/batrnews. We're now joined by a very fascinating gentleman. I say that simply on the basis of having been working my way through his latest book. Barrett Tillman is the author of a lot of books, including the bestseller Warriors. He's written over 500 articles and a screenplay. He's received 5 writing awards, including the American Aviation Historical Society's Outstanding Contributor Award, the Air Force Historical Foundation Writing Award, and the Admiral Arthur Radford Award for Naval Aviation History and Literature. He learned to fly in 1965 and lives in Mesa, Arizona, but most importantly, for purposes of this conversation, he is the author of a new book on General Curtis LeMay. It is appropriately entitled LeMay. It's a biography of the great Air Force general, and it's a part of the Great General series that has been released by Palgrave Macmillan, which includes works on Patton and Eisenhower and MacArthur and Stonewall Jackson and Ulysses S. Grant, if I'm remembering this correctly. We're going to be spending the next hour with Barrett Tillman talking about Curtis LeMay and his new book and the implications of this general's career, not simply for our understanding of World War II and the Cold War, but also General LeMay's impact upon current American military and foreign policy as well. Dr. Tillman, how are you, sir?
Doing very well, and thank you for the honorific, but I'm just plain Barrett, and I'm not a doctor.
Very good. I wasn't sure whether you were or you weren't. Your biography is certainly very impressive just as it is, but should we go with Barrett? Is that okay?
That's just fine. You bet.
Very good, sir. How did you decide to write this book on General LeMay, and what in general sketch do you see as some of the most significant aspects of his life in regard to what our listeners might be interested in prior to picking up their own copies of the book?
I was approached through my nonfiction agent by Palgrave Macmillan to write a biography of another American military leader, Marine General Julian Smith, about whom I knew practically nothing. And rather than spend probably months just learning enough about him to write a biography, I submitted a counterproposal saying that I would be more enthusiastic writing a biography of General Jimmy Doolittle, the fabulous American aviator who, among other things, led the 1942 raid on Tokyo, because I was fortunate to know General Jimmy a bit more than casually. And I was surprised when the publisher said that their editorial board did not consider Doolittle a significant enough leader, so they came back with LeMay, and I said, well, I had lunch in the same restaurant as he did one time, so
yes.
at least I had that connection. And, of course, I was fairly familiar with his career just from researching and writing other World War II topics. And so we agreed on LeMay, and as far as I know, he remains the only airman in the series. I think eventually the series is going to run about 20 installments, so thus far, LeMay is the only aviator in the bunch.
Now, we'll be back with Barrett Tillman, the author of LeMay, a biography, part of the Great General series of Palgrave Macmillan, when Mark Dankos America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for this fascinating topic.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stay Gone uses all-natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stay Gone must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stay Gone risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestaygone.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle. And today, you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're with Barrett Tillman today. He is the author of the new book, LeMay, which is a part of the Great General series of Palgrave Macmillan. And Mr. Tillman, I think I can say this effectively because I have now read the complete text of LeMay, is a fantastic writer. If you are interested at all in the history of the United States Air Force and American combat aviation, if you're interested in World War II and the Cold War, and one of the most fascinating figures, I would say, in the history of the 20th century, then the book LeMay is for you. And I have said as much in Breaking All the Rules News, which has a major post on this book, as well as contact information about how to read more about it in the way of reviews. And the book has just been out since the first part of this month, so it's a brand new publication. I found it at Borders when I walked in the other day in San Antonio. Just saw it in the front of the store and knew that that book was going to be for me immediately. And as we sit here and talk a little bit about this, Barrett, you were going to say something before the break. Do you remember what it was? If not, I have a series of things I wanted to ask you.
Well, I believe that I was going to respond to your prior question about LeMay's influence on American military affairs. And, of course, it spanned all of his 36 years of service in the Army Air Corps and then later the U.S. Air Force. And as I tried to demonstrate in the book, LeMay was formed early on in a professional sense in that he believed that in order to be as effective as he possibly could be, he had to master not just the physical aspects of flying an airplane, but he trained himself in navigation and bombing. And it was said at one point that Kurt LeMay was probably the finest pilot, navigator, and bombardier in most of the units that he served in. Whether that's true or not, I think it demonstrates the depth and breadth of his professional achievements. And having proven that to himself before World War II, that it was possible to master each of those missions, he took that and ran with it when he commanded the Strategic Air Command and made certain that every crew member of one of his bombers could perform at least one other function in case the primary, say, navigator or bombardier was unable to continue. So LeMay was a multifaceted, multi-talented military professional, and I think professionalism is the foundation of his entire career.
Yes, and in a little bit, I wanted to ask you some things about the personality of Curtis LeMay, because it seems to me that not only professionally, but in regard to trying to understand him as a personality, he is a far more complex individual than I think a lot of people have been led to believe based on caricatures of him in the press over the years. In regard to his career, it seems to me that that folks who are at all acquainted with him tend to think of him in terms of the air campaigns over Germany, then subsequently the air campaigns that he conducted against Japan, particularly this incredible raid in March of 1945 that your book talks about. And then, of course, he's remembered as the father of the Strategic Air Command. Are there any things specifically from those three phases of his career, Germany, Japan, and then subsequently with SAC, that should come to mind for listeners here who are interested in buying the book?
Kurt LeMay was a superb leader, and I think if you look at the current installments in the Palgrave Great General series, he's the one who stands out so far as being decidedly non-charismatic. I think I said in the book that nobody ever accused Kurt LeMay of charisma, whereas certainly Eisenhower had that avuncular quality about him. Patton was flamboyance personified, extremely colorful. So was MacArthur in a somewhat different vein. And I believe MacArthur is the next one coming up in the series. So Kurt LeMay's brand of leadership was much, much more subdued than almost any other American military leader at that level. And basically we're talking the four-star level. But if you talk to people who worked with him and knew him, and he had very few intimate friends. I'm going to say he had maybe three or four really close friends throughout his life. The one thing that comes through is enormous respect, whether you're talking about the airman with a broom sweeping the concrete out on the flight line, or the operations officers, or the combat-qualified air crews. They all knew in Strategic Air Command that the SYNC, the commander-in-chief, could show up with his trademark cigar almost any time, anywhere, day or night, instantly take in the situation, and he had a way of boring in immediately to the core of any particular situation, and he could exhibit really exceptional intuition sometimes. I'm told of a case that I think it was at Carswell Air Force Base in the 1950s, where he arrived for a surprise inspection, and somehow the base commander had learned of it and had enlisted men out with brooms and mops cleaning up oil stains on the tarmac. And LeMay looked around. He was barely off the airplane and turned 90 degrees, walked up to an airman wielding a broom. This was a radar specialist, a highly trained technician who was sweeping up the flight line. And LeMay asked him one question, "What are you doing here, son?" And he said, "Well, I'm sweeping the tarmac, sir." And LeMay said, "What's your duty?" "Radar technician, sir." And LeMay turned around to the base commander and said, if your people have nothing better to do than sweep the tarmac, then you're not the talent I'm looking for. Get off my base." And according to my sources, that officer was out of the U.S. Air Force in about 48 hours.
Yes. And, you know, what's interesting to me about LeMay, of course, I never met him. I pulled a stunt when I was in the eighth grade, largely just to shock the faculty of the private academy I was going to in Dayton, Ohio at the time. And in 1968, when they had a mock presidential election there, I voted for the Wallace LeMay ticket in secret. I was the only one of 500 students who did. And the entire auditorium groaned at that particular point. And it wasn't as much a question of voting for Wallace as it was voting for LeMay. And also, I wanted to see what the reaction would be of the headmaster who had to read these election results in front of all of these parents and students. But my own father was in Vietnam at the time, so he didn't have to witness this, or I probably wouldn't have done it. But at any rate, talking about General LeMay, my father was acquainted with him. My dad's a retired American Air Force colonel here in San Antonio. And interestingly enough, my father encountered LeMay two or three times in his life, I guess. And in each case, the one time my dad's application to transfer from the or to move from the Army Air Corps into the Air Force itself was approved by LeMay. And then the other thing is that a couple of times over the years when LeMay would come to a Air Force base where my dad would be stationed, and there was a big conference that would be held there, and for whatever reason, the Air Force on those particular trips was not giving these command generals the authorization to bring their usual aides. They would appoint these junior officers who were actually stationed at these bases just to do weekend duty with these fellows, and my dad drew General LeMay twice on this basis. And when my father describes LeMay, it's quite fascinating to me that the picture that he paints is something that I would not have imagined. He said that LeMay, just was a very, for my dad, a very reasonable person to work for, at least on the basis of this temporary duty at these conferences. LeMay seemed to be very appreciative. He seemed to have a genuine concern in the people who worked for him. And there's a human dimension to the guy that my dad has described to me that doesn't fit the caricature of him at all in many political circles in the United States, where the mere mention of his name draws up these graphic images of massive bombings and atomic bombings and tens of thousands of civilian casualties and this sort of thing. It's interesting to me to look at this because, on the one hand, he was an incredibly brilliant tactician and followed what he believed to be true down to the last jot and tittle in regard to how to win a war, at least win it from the air. And yet, by the same token, there seems to be another side of this guy that the mass public has never really encountered.
That's exactly right. LeMay really was two people in the same skin. If you talk to those who spent much time with him, as your father indicated, LeMay genuinely was concerned with the welfare of what he called the troops. And he proved that when he took over the Strategic Air Command in 1948, because he made immediate priorities of improving housing and food. And having been an ROTC cadet himself before he was commissioned in 1928, he had a sort of a grunt's eye view of the military, and he knew that aside from providing for the basic welfare of the people in a given command, just on what we might call humanitarian grounds, if that's not too strong a term, He also...
Hold that thought about LeMay and the humanitarianism. We'll be right back after a commercial break.
Sure thing.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Barrett Tillman, the author of LeMay, in the Great General series of Palgrove Macmillan. Stay tuned.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined in the final 40 minutes of the show by Barrett Tillman, the author of LeMay, which is a part of the Great General series that's out with Palgrave Macmillan. The book LeMay has just been issued since, I believe, the 7th of February this month, so it's right hot off the press. And I picked up my copy at Borders, bought it for my father for his birthday, and then subsequently... Barrett was kind enough, and his publicist was kind enough up in New York, Emily Beckman, to send me a gratis copy of the book from my own library. And I hope that, again, many of you listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network today will avail yourselves of the opportunity to obtain this book for your personal library. This is a part of American history that, whatever you think of Curtis LeMay, he was a major player in American history and in combat aviation in the 20th century. And it's just, in my judgment, absolute must reading, 2195, I believe. And is also just a wealth of information from an enjoyable perspective. This is a very readable book. It's not pedantic. It gets into all kinds of things that you'll enjoy. It's 205 pages long. Barrett, you were talking a little bit about something I had introduced, which is the thing that you constantly hear from people who knew LeMay, including my father, and that is that in what seems to be an absolute paradox, this great commander and advocate of strategic bombing of mass civilian centers during World War II was on a personal basis beloved by many of the people who worked for him and seen as a very nice man and a humanitarian.
In fact, ironic as it seems, LeMay received a humanitarian award after he had successfully overseen the Berlin airlift in 1948-49. I'm sure that occurred before many of our listeners were born. But,
my dad was one of his boys in the Berlin airlift. My dad was one of the burgeoning logistical supervisors of that whole situation.
Well, then he was working 24/7 for months at a time, I suspect, because that was an extremely intense operation. And LeMay, as commander of U.S. Air Forces in Europe at the time, was given the responsibility of finding a way around the Soviet ground blockade that prevented supplies of any kind from reaching the western sections of Berlin. So on virtually no notice at all, LeMay and his staff came up with what they called Operation Vittles. And for, I think, a little over a year, supplied West Berlin entirely by air. And consequently, for that humanitarian effort, LeMay received a decoration from the German government for that purpose. And that is a much larger, obviously more visible manifestation of LeMay's peacetime attitude, because, as I said, when he took over SAC, it had just been the victim of gross neglect under the previous commander, George Kenney, who really had no background in heavy bombardment at all. And LeMay looked at the figures and realized that if he was going to have a command to lead for very much longer, he needed to make drastic changes. So when he arrived at Omaha in 1948, one of the first things he did was to start construction of new base housing for Air Force personnel. He sent Air Force cooks and bakers to some of the finest restaurants in Omaha so that they could learn how to prepare more appealing and more appetizing meals. And in that regard, LeMay literally built Strategic Air Command from the ground up, practically one barrack and one chow hall at a time. And consequently, retention and morale, which are inextricably linked, improved tremendously. And by the time LeMay rolled out of SAC to become Air Force Vice Chief of Staff in 1957, SAC was clearly the dominant community in the U.S. Air Force.
Yes. And tell us from your own research in terms of this man's life and career. You know, on the one hand, of course, we talk about the humanitarian side. On the other, there is the great controversy over the methodologies of General LeMay in regard to strategic bombing of massively civilian populated areas. The great raid over Tokyo in March of 1945 comes to mind. I remember reading several years ago Joseph Persico's account of LeMay's raid over Tokyo in a book entitled Roosevelt's Secret War, FDR and World War II. Obviously, the raid had tremendous results, both in terms of the massive numbers of casualties, as well as being one of the things, of course, that precipitated the end of our war with Japan. But as near as I can tell from reading your book, LeMay was not really a philosopher. I mean, in other words, he looked at this and said, hey, my job is to win this thing and kill as many of the enemy as it takes to win and to minimize the number of casualties that occur on the American side. And that basically is the way we have to run it. When we come back, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, Barrett, if that's a correct reading of the LeMay mindset in regard to some of these controversial operations. We'll be back with Barrett Tillman, the author of LeMay. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle. And today, you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Barrett Tillman, the author of LeMay. This is a part of the Great General series of Palgrave Macmillan. And Barrett, before the break, we were talking a little bit about my reference to Joseph Persico's book, Roosevelt's Secret War, FDR and World War II, where there is a very graphic account in that book of the human toll of LeMay's raid over Tokyo. I think it was March 9th, 1945. And yet by the same token, LeMay, I think, believed philosophically that there was obviously a need for victory. The strategic bombing guaranteed victory. I think I heard General LeMay say once, or I read it somewhere, that he said that war was inherently immoral. and therefore you tried to bring it to resolution as quickly as possible by inflicting as many casualties as necessary for the other side and preserving your own people. And as near as I can tell, General LeMay never seemed to experience any internal dissonance about any of this at any point in his life. Is that correct?
Generally, that's true. I think perhaps the most revealing portion of his memoir called Mission with LeMay dealt specifically with inflicting casualties on civilians. And LeMay apparently had the mental and emotional ability and the discipline to compartmentalize his personal feelings and his professional feelings. In the memoir, he mentioned that he could envision a three-year-old girl burning to death, screaming for her mother in a house. And that obviously is not the the sentiment of what Irving Stone, the liberal writer and commentator, described LeMay as a caveman in a bomber. Of course, parenthetically, it was alleged, I don't know if it was ever proven, that Stone was receiving funding from the KGB. But be that as it may, Kurt LeMay's public image, about which he was vastly unconcerned, is that of a cigar-chomping, jowly bomber man, and he certainly was the leading advocate of the American doctrine of precision bombing. But having seen the potential for precision bombing before World War II, both as a pilot and a bombardier himself, once he got to combat in Europe in 1942, leading the 305th Bomb Group, he began to realize right away that the results were not matching the Army Air Force's brochure. And consequently, he did some research and found that the reason the British had switched from daylight to night bombing was that unescorted bombers had a very hard time surviving in daylight skies, as the U.S. Army Air Force learned shortly thereafter. The difference was that when the British switched to night bombing, their accuracy, which was not terrific in daylight, virtually disappeared. According to one study I've read from British sources, around 1939-1940, the British were finding that only about 20% of the bombs they dropped were known to have landed within 5 miles of the intended aim point. So LeMay realized that in order to get results with strategic bombing, you needed larger formations, and that in turn really was the foundation of his military philosophy. LeMay believed in massive application of force, and as you just said, Mark, he believed that the more violence you visit upon the enemy, the sooner the war ends, and that was the entire philosophy behind his low-level incendiary raid against Tokyo on March 9th and 10th, 1945, because the high-altitude bombing just was not hitting the target. So LeMay threw away the book that actually, to an extent, he had helped to write, and I think that's probably as good an indication of his professional acumen as we'll find, because he was nothing if not objective, and he was able to examine his own methods, dissect them, and where they didn't fit the situation anymore, he found other means, and he did that consistently throughout his career.
Yes. In your book, from page 150 onward, you discuss the relationship between Curtis LeMay and John Kennedy and the way in which the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis, I suppose, were the two points of intersection in regard to their relationship. I know that Kevin Costner's book, or his movie, 13 Days, which obviously has a pro-Kennedy slant, was designed, I think, to paint General LeMay in a particular light. What's the other side of that equation? What was LeMay's opinion of JFK on the basis of both the Bay of Pigs and subsequently the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Well, because the Bay of Pigs operation in 1962 was a CIA plan that the Kennedy administration had inherited from Eisenhower, neither LeMay nor really any of the other Joint Chiefs of Staff at that time had much influence on it. LeMay describes in his memoir how a civilian who was never even introduced, but obviously was a CIA a representative, described the plans for the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was envisioned to lead to a popular uprising in Cuba and overthrow the Castro regime. It had virtually no chance to succeed once the State Department had determined that there would be no American military aircraft involved. So it was just a small number of counterinsurgency aircraft operated by CIA air crews that could not compete with the Castro's Air Force, and the result was a total debacle. LeMay was bitterly resentful for the rest of his life, and I think understandably so, that the Kennedy administration and its acolytes since then have cast Bay of Pigs as a failure because John F. Kennedy received poor advice. And as LeMay was wont to point out, the Kennedy administration, specifically Dean Rusk at the State Department and Robert McNamara at Defense, were not interested in professional military advice, and consequently the CIA plan collapsed and was a huge debacle. Going forward, to the missile crisis came about a year later, the military was obviously more intimately involved, but you mentioned the Kevin Costner movie 13 Days. The portrayal of Kurt LeMay in that movie is essentially a cartoon. He's depicted as a salivating buffoon who can't wait to flush the nuclear birds from their hardened shelters and go to DEFCON 1 with the Soviets. What LeMay and the rest, and I should say most of the other Joint Chiefs, realized was that at that time, the United States enjoyed approximately an 8-to-1 superiority over the Soviet Union in nuclear weapons, both tactical and strategic. And in that regard, there was simply no way that Nikita Khrushchev or the Politburo was going to risk incineration of Moscow for the benefit of a bearded Caribbean dictator. What perhaps LeMay did not fully appreciate was the possibility of unintentional release of nuclear weapons, because at the time you had Soviet submarines in the waters off Cuba, and they had nuclear-tipped torpedoes. We had American fighter pilots with Genie missiles, which were small nuclear weapons, patrolling the Alaskan perimeter and flying over the Bering Sea. So, yes, it was possible that there could have been a nuclear exchange, but as far as the end of the world with ICBMs flying back and forth, neither LeMay nor very many other people in the military profession saw that as a likelihood, and consequently the attitude that comes across is that the Cuban Missile Crisis was hyped beyond its actual threat level, probably for domestic political consumption. And if so, it's been successful, because a great many Americans still believe that the Kennedy administration prevented a global nuclear exchange.
Yes, when the alternative view would be that in terms of what happened both with Berlin, the Berlin Wall, and with the Bay of Pigs situation, and with Kennedy's was perceived at the time as a largely failed Vienna conference with Khrushchev. A lot of people point to those three things as being perceived weaknesses in the Kennedy administration on the part of the Russians, and that led them into the belief that they could then move into Cuba with the ICBMs and intermediate-range ballistic missiles. So I think the other side of this equation is that the perceived weakness and incompetence of the Kennedy administration in the early months of the of 1961 and 1962 largely led to the crisis to begin with. And that's, of course, a perspective that's largely kept out of the corporate media for obvious reasons, I think.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I remember on the 40th anniversary of the missile crisis, McNamara and other Americans and some Russian representatives met to discuss the situation. And at the end of the event, I saw McNamara interviewed, and a reporter asked him, what did we learn from the Cuban Missile Crisis? And his response was, avoid conflict. Well, that tells you all you need to know, in my humble opinion, about the military philosophy of the Kennedy and especially the Johnson administrations, because it's the exact same situation as the schoolyard bully. If you let him have his run of the schoolyard, he's going to bully everybody he can. If you stand up to him, chances are he'll stand down. So in that regard, I do not think that Mr. McNamara drew the logical conclusion.
Yes, and to me, as I look at this whole thing, again, as I examine General LeMay's career, first in the air war against Germany and later the air war against Japan, and then, of course, the Berlin airlift and the Strategic Air Command involvement, it's my perception, and if I'm erroneous in this, correct me, but it seems to me that the most frustrating aspect of LeMay's career may have been as Air Force Chief of Staff in dealing with these very issues with both the Kennedy administration generally and McNamara specifically.
Well, there's no doubt about that, Mark. I think I mentioned towards the end of the book that the irony of Curtis LeMay's career is that he exerted vastly more influence and had vastly more effect upon world events as a major general, a two-star general in 1944-45, than he ever did as a four-star Air Force Chief of Staff. And that, again, is almost entirely because the Kennedy administration, which, of course, rolled into the Johnson administration in late 63, had a vastly different worldview. And Robert McNamara, as Secretary of Defense, had an enormous amount of self-confidence in his ability to manage not only the American military establishment, but to get along with the Soviets as well. And consequently, you had the unprecedented situation in which John Kennedy recalled a retired Army Chief of Staff, Maxwell Taylor, to active duty and appointed him as the presidential advisor on military affairs. And that was simply a way around the Joint Chiefs, who did not generally subscribe to McNamara's worldview or his philosophy for building and maintaining the American defense establishment. And that meant that going into Vietnam, especially in 1964, Johnson and McNamara were almost without exception only hearing what they wanted to hear. And to place it in context, remember that the 1964 presidential elections were coming up very soon. The Tonkin Gulf incidents, in which North Vietnamese torpedo boats, in one case did and in another case did not, attack American warships in international waters, required for domestic political consumption Johnson to be seen taking action against a communist aggressor. And this at a time when, of course, Barry Goldwater was the Republican presidential nominee. And in August of 64, you're looking at only 90 days out of the election, and consequently, the Johnson administration leapt into the Southeast Asia arena to a greater extent than it had previously, and within less than a year, we had a full-blown military operation in the air, Rolling Thunder, as it was called, and that was totally anathema to Curt LeMay, who had retired in early 65. But as I say, LeMay's military philosophy was massive application of force in order to end the war as soon as possible. Rolling Thunder was the exact opposite of that. It was an on-again, off-again, carrot-and-stick approach conducted by the Johnson administration, and consequently the North Vietnamese were able to ride out the years-long on-again, off-again campaign, and not until 1972 did air power finally make itself felt in North Vietnam.
Yes, and of course, one can argue, and I personally believe this, that the Johnson-Kennedy-McNamara philosophy led directly to the debacle of April 1975 with the fall of Saigon and the tragedy of that event in the light of 58,000 American deaths, and not to mention, of course, the untold number of Americans who suffered physical and psychiatric injuries, even though they technically survived the war. I wanted to ask you one other thing, Barrett, and this is an interesting question for me, since with kind of tongue-in-cheek, I voted for the Wallace-LeMay ticket in an eighth-grade mock presidential election at Miami Valley School in Dayton, Ohio. I guess just trying to be a rebellious kid, trying to do something that would stick in the craw of some of my faculty members, who I basically had a high regard for, but I like to have fun doing this sort of thing from time to time. But seriously, in regard to General LeMay's decision to run with George Wallace in 1968 on that American Independent Party ticket, when we come back from the break, I'd like you to address that question and as to why General LeMay did that, and then we'll wrap things up by talking about how people can buy the book. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Barrett Tillman, the author of LeMay, in the Great General series of Palgrave Macmillan. Stay tuned.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase. WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined in the final minutes of the show today by Barrett Tillman, the author of LeMay, a biography of General Curtis Emerson LeMay in the Great General series, out with Palgrave Macmillan as of the 7th of February this month. A great book, by the way, $21.95. I highly recommend it. I purchased my own copy, and Palgrave Macmillan was also gracious enough to send me a gratis copy, which I appreciate very much. And, Bear, in these final minutes, what's your reading as to why General LeMay chose to run with George Wallace in that 1968 American Independent ticket? My dad, of course, privately at the time, told me that he felt that that was a personal and professional and political mistake for General LeMay. That's, of course, debatable, but that was my dad's private take on it, despite the fact that he continued to hold LeMay in the highest regard up to the present time. Why do you think LeMay ran with Wallace, and do you think it was a mistake?
Well, there's no doubt that it was absolutely disastrous to LeMay's personal reputation, because prior to that time, he had been strictly neutral in any of his public pronouncements as long as he was on active duty. And he said in his memoir that up until the day he hung up his uniform, he felt that a military professional owed his superiors his best professional advice, and that once an argument had been made and lost, the only thing left to do either was to salute smartly and execute the orders, or lay his stars on the table and walk away. I personally think that had LeMay been eligible to remain on the Joint Chiefs beyond 1965, he probably would have walked away, because he felt so strongly about the potential for air power to have an effect in Southeast Asia, and then when he saw air crews being killed unnecessarily owing to restrictive rules of engagement, I just have to believe that he would not have tolerated that. But once he hung up his uniform and retired, he felt no further strictures on stating his opinions, and LeMay's decision to run with Wallace really was mainly about the Vietnam War. LeMay, despite I think what is perhaps some disingenuous criticism of him as a racist, clearly was not. I mean, anybody who looks at the integration of the U.S. Armed Forces after World War II knows that the military as a whole was way ahead of the country generally in integrating minorities, especially blacks, into the armed forces, and LeMay integrated SAC with, as near as I can tell, without any problems at all. But LeMay's attitude towards Wallace seems to have been that once LeMay convinced himself that Wallace actually had modified his previous overtly segregationist views, that LeMay was reasonably comfortable in running on the American Independent ticket as a way of forcing Richard Nixon to win the war. And obviously that was not going to happen. The AI, American Independent Party, got 13% of the vote and in essence just made Richard Nixon a minority president.
Barrett Tillman, I wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Mark Dankos America today. This has been a wonderful show. I recommend this book to everyone out there without equivocation. The title is LeMay. It's a biography in the Great General series out with Palgrave Macmillan, and Barrett Tillman has done an absolutely fantastic job with this work. $21.95, you won't be disappointed. This is Mark Dankos America signing off today live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. See you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time. God bless.